Lisa and I salvaged all the picnic that was left and washed the dishes and put everything back in the basket. Hilda started to put it into the bottom of our wardrobe and found that it was heavy, so we uncovered it and looked, packed tight as it was when we left Oz. 6 bananas and everything else. Cross my heart. Go look for yourself.
No, I'll accept the report of my department heads. Jake, can you write equations covering a picnic basket that refills itself? Will it go on doing so?
Yes, to the first, Captain. Equations can be written to describe anything. To the second, I have no data. We'll have to wait and see. But the mathematical description would be simpler for a picnic basket that replenishes itself indefinitely than for one that does it once and then stops. I would have to describe the discontinuity, but I am no longer troubled by natural or unnatural laws that don't apply here in Universe Zero.
Sharpie, your earlier answer recommended that we complete the rotations.
No, Captain Bly, I simply pointed out that the first 12 had not been unprofitable. I might add that we could have completed the last 3 by now, had we not spent time debating it.
Hilda, honey, your cowardly captain needed that time to get his nerve back. My yump in Yemeni, once we settle down, all 3 of you are going to practice handling this craft. Then we'll elect a new skipper.
We would simply re-elect you, Zeb. Each of us will go on doing what he or she can do best.
Time is out of joint. Oh, cursed spite, that I was ever picked to set it right.
You misquoted.
I always do. What sort of universe do we wind up in next, Hilda?
Cap'n, we have 3 more to complete Jacob's schedule, and I have 4 more on the list of highest probability. One of them is utterly useless to us. We couldn't stay, but amusing and safe. The other 3 are possible places to live, but each has its own dangers. If I tell you and Jacob, or even Didi, it might affect the outcome and we might miss the one we need most. As the chief of surgery back on campus used to say, I don't know, let's operate and find out.
I sighed. All hands, stand by to rotate. Report.
Strapped down, Captain Bly, honey.
Co-pilot, rotation still set. This group is around T-axis with the usual 90-degree displacements. H and W are null. Ta, tau, and L are spatial axes this time, but the group is only 2, as the remaining 3 rotations duplicate earlier ones, 1 for each earlier group.
Jacob, how do you keep track of that?
A checkoff list.
No, dear. How do you understand it?
I don't. But this is what our 6-dimensional equations call for. So far, it has worked. Hilda, my love, once a scientist thinks he understands a process, his mind begins to ossify. Stand by. Execute. Green fire. Rotate. Execute. A formless red fog. Rotate. Execute. We came out in a starry universe. Captain? These constellations look familiar, don't you think? I think so.
They are familiar, Hilda asserted, except that there is one bright star near the Gemini that doesn't belong there, so that ought to be our own sun. We're way out past Pluto, where the comets spend the winter. Let's move in closer and find Earth.
Don't be in such a hurry, science officer. What was that first rotation, green fire?
Would you settle for the deadly green nebula in the Legion of Space? It was on the way to the runaway star where Alidori had been taken after she was kidnapped.
That was on your list?
All 4 of us voted for it. 3 of us voted for the 3 stories as a group. You voted specifically for the first story.
Sharpie, I never had a chance to read the other 2. How about that red fog we rotated into?
That one is a little harder to figure. It could be any space opera universe, especially one by any writer that pays respectful attention to astronomy, Clement, Anderson, and so forth. But there were 2 votes for Niven's known space and 2 for the mote in God's eye. I lumped them together as 4, but whether the old gentleman had anything to do with it or not, I think we blundered into a red giant star and got out again before it mattered. After all, a red giant isn't mass, exactly. It's closer to what we call vacuum. Anyhow, we weren't hurt. We were there about 2 seconds.
Less than that, beloved. I set it with one click and barely had my thumb off the execute button. Captain, do you wish to transit toward that bright star, or shall I check its spectral signature first? Let's chop off 30 or 40 AUs with some careful Tennessee windage and get a rough crossfix. Maybe that will give us a disk I can measure. If not, we'll narrow it down until it does show a disk. I'll measure it, and you can place us 1 AU from the sun. Not necessarily in the ecliptic, but anywhere on the sphere from which the sun subtends half a degree. From there, we'll be able to see Earth easily, after which we play by ear. Co-pilot? Advice? No problem, Captain, but I suggest that you make that offset wide, say 15 degrees. When we did it to reach Mars, it was sufficient simply to miss it. With the sun, I would want to be sure that we were more than 1 AU. Jake, you are so right. I don't want to fry my eyeballs. All hands, when I measure the sun's angular width, everybody duck down out of direct sunlight and don't look.
Zebediah, you'll blind yourself.
Dee Dee, darling, the gun sight has a built-in polarizer. Didn't I show it to you?
No, sir, you did not. You be careful.
Hun, I'll start with the polarizer fully crossed, then open it carefully. Promise.
Spacecraft, identify yourself.
That made me jerk with surprise. Who said that?
Lensman Ted Smith, Lieutenant Galactic Patrol, Entity, Commanding Patrol Vessel Nighthawk. I regret being forced to enter your mind, but you have been ignoring sub-ether radio for 7 minutes, 32 seconds. Switch it on and I will get out of your mind. Do not maneuver. We have weapons trained on you.
Captain, Jake whispered, I've set to rotate. Don't do it, Jake. Lensman, we don't have sub-ether radio. This is Continuacraft, Gay Deceiver, Captain Zeb Carter speaking. Do you read me?
I read you loud and clear. What happened to your sub-ether radio? Do you need help?
Captain Smith, I don't know what sub-ether radio is. No, I don't think we need help, but we could use some astrogational advice. Where are we?
For the moment, the important point is that you are in my patrol sector. You are an unscheduled ship insufficiently identified. I repeat, do not maneuver. By order of the Galactic Patrol. Do you understand?
Roger Wilco, Lensman. I regret having intruded into your patrol space. This is a private ship engaged in peaceful exploration.
That is what I am about to determine, Captain. Stay where you are and make no hostile moves, and you will be safe.
Lensman, can you see through my eyes?
Are you inviting me to do so?
Certainly. Use my eyes, use my ears, but don't try to take over my mind or this ship will disappear. I squeezed my co-pilot's knee. Jake kept his thumb on the execute button.
I warned you not to maneuver. Ah! Interesting,
Hilda snapped.
Lieutenant, quit threatening us. A lensman is supposed to be an officer and a gentleman. I intend to report you to Prime Base, to the Port Admiral himself. You're an oaf.
Sorry, madam. I do not wish to offend, but I have duty to perform. Captain, will you please turn your head so that I can see who is speaking?
Certainly, but let me introduce all of them. On my right, I looked at Jake. Is Dr. Jacob Burrows. I intentionally omitted co-pilot. Behind him, I then looked at Hilda, is his wife, Dr. Hilda Burrows, xenobiologist and chief of science. And let me offer you this advice, Lensman. It is never safe to offend Dr. Hilda.
I gathered that impression, Captain. Madam, I would not willingly offend, but I have duties. Shall I get out of your mind entirely? If you speak to me, I will hear with Captain Carter's ears. He can, if he will, repeat to you any thought in answer.
Oh, I suppose it's all right, just in conversation. But don't go any deeper into my mind. Mentor would not like it, as you know quite well.
Dr. Hilda, your mention of A certain entity surprises me, from one who is not a lensman.
I don't need a lens. You can check that with Ariza,
I said hastily. Shall we get on with the introductions? Directly behind me, I loosened my belt and twisted to look at Didi, is my wife, Dr. D.T. Carter, General Symbologist and Astrogator. Lensman, are you now satisfied that we are a peaceful party of scientists, or is there something more that you wish to know?
Captain, I can see that this ship is not a pirate vessel, unarmed and unarmored. Oh, I noted the controls for a coherent light gun, but that wouldn't be much use to a pirate. Nor can I visualize two men and two women attempting to attack a space liner. But that is just one of my responsibilities. This ship, small as it is, could be carrying millions of credits in contraband.
Say what you mean, Lensman, snapped Hilda. Drugs. But don't use the word Zwilnik.
They could all hear his sigh, mentally.
Yes, Dr. Hilda, drugs. But I did not introduce that offensive word into the discussion.
I heard you thinking it. Don't do it again.
Lensman, I intervened. We have a few medical drugs aboard. The only one you could be interested in is a few milligrams of morphine in our medical kit, for emergencies. Dr. Hilda is also our medical officer and is qualified to administer it prudently. And so am I. As a command pilot, I am a qualified paramedic, but we carry no thionite, no bentlum, no hadiv, no nitrolabe. You are using your lens. You know that I am telling the truth.
Captain, it's not that easy. Before I first hailed you, I did try a slight probe. Please, Dr. Burroughs, it was in line of duty. I don't think I've ever encountered four mines so fully blocked. And this is a most curious craft. It is obviously designed for aerodynamic use rather than for space. Yet here you are, where you have no business to be, and I can't see how you got here. I'm afraid I have no choice but to detain you and examine this ship thoroughly. Take it apart piece by piece if necessary.
Lensman, I said earnestly, don't be hasty. Use your lens. You can search this vessel much more thoroughly by lens than any other way. Go ahead. We've nothing to hide, and we have a great deal to offer the Galactic Patrol. But you won't get it by pushing us around.
You certainly won't. Cap'n, let us leave. I'm tired of stupidity.
Wait a half, Dr. Hilda. Please. Use your lens, Captain Smith. Search us with it.
I am forced to say that I can't.
You don't know how? Clono's brass whiskers, what are you doing on patrol? Get in touch with someone who can use a lens properly. Kinnison, Warsel, Tregoncey, someone competent. The lensman's thought was as stiff as if he had spoken aloud.
I am not a second stage lensman. I am not even unattached. An officer of my rank does not disturb second stage lensmen with minor patrol problems. Remain where you are, do not maneuver. We will match your intrinsic and take you into our cargo hold. It will be necessary to sweep back your wings. Please do that now. Nothing else.
Wait a half. In the first place, you can't. Not unless I choose to let you. How do you think we got here? Mull that over, Lensman. I want to show our means to Sir Austin Cardinge and give it to the patrol. If you won't help, we'll go to Prime Base without your permission. While Dr. Hilda is giving a full report of this encounter with you to the Port Admiral, Dr. Burroughs and I will show Sir Austin what we have that can benefit the patrol enormously. But we aren't going anywhere as your prisoners, Lensman. Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
I have placed a tractor beam on you. Don't fight it.
Gay-bounce, 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 gay-bounce. Lensman, have you found us again? Come in, Lensman Ted Smith. Come in, Lensman Ted Smith.
I've located you again. What did you do?
I'll tell Sir Austin. You wouldn't understand it. I purposely did not go far so that you could find me again. But touch us once more with one of your damned beams and I'll go so far and fast that you'll never find me. Until Prime Base calls you in to find out why you botched this contact. Will you agree not to use beams or weapons while we talk like civilized people? Or do you want another game of tiddlywinks? Make up your mind.
The lensman appeared to take a moment to think it over.
I suggest that we each take no action while we confer.
No weapons, no beams?
No weapons, no beams, no mental reservations.
And no mental reservations on my part, lensman. Flag of truce while we powwow. Agreed?
I agree, Captain Carter.
Thank you, sir. You have Bergenholms for inertialess drive. That makes the Nighthawk very fast. Correct?
Quite fast. Correct.
Limited only by the power of your drive and the amount of mass in so-called empty space, I believe.
I can't discuss the capabilities of my ship, Captain. Classified information.
That's okay, because I can discuss the capabilities of mine. They aren't classified, but I prefer to give them to the Galactic Patrol rather than let them become public knowledge. For Bascone to use, for example.
I felt the lensman's emotional reaction, instantly quenched and followed up at once.
I hold you with that. Sorry. I simply want you to know that we must be taken seriously. The Nighthawk is fast. Gay Deceiver is enormously faster. Unthinkably faster. You saw how quickly I broke your tractor beam and went elsewhere. Is a second demonstration necessary?
Not at the moment. Perhaps later.
As you wish, lensman. We are going to Prime Base. We can do it any of three ways. With your friendly advice and astrogation, and with your sub-ether or lens message to the Port Admiral that we are coming, or we can end this powwow, leaving you free to capture us or blow us out of space. Doesn't matter which, because you can't do either, and we will go to Prime Base unassisted. But a third way is what I recommend. Take us and our car into your ship as guests, with your word as a lensman that we and our car may leave freely at any time and that you will not resume hostilities. Correction. Police action with respect to us until we are out of your ship. Do it that way, and I will let you inspect our vessel. You yourself, I mean, not thumb-fingered mechanics who might damage equipment they don't understand. You will see that we have techniques useful to the patrol, and it will be to your credit that you recognize their value and brought them in.
A lensman does not seek credit, Captain. He carries out his duty.
True, but when the Port Admiral pats you on the back, I don't think you'll spit in his face.
I could feel Ted Smith's wry amusement.
No, I don't think I would.
I would like to see you get that pat on the back. You strike me as a man doing your best in unique circumstances. I would rather not have Dr. Hilda reporting you to the Port Admiral. She eats cat eagles for breakfast. Well, shall we do it the friendly way? Or shall we leave while you try to stop us? Take plenty of time to make up your mind. 10 seconds isn't too long. I'm patient.
Smith took 3 seconds.
Let's do it the friendly way.
Good. Spell it out, please.
Captain Carter, on behalf of the Galactic Patrol and by authority vested in me as a patrol ship's master in space, I invite you and your companions, especially Dr. Hilda, who eats cat eagles, with your ship into my ship as guests. You and your ship may leave at any time, and no patrol action will be taken with respect to your ship until you are clear of my ship, at least as far apart as we are now. Is that fair?
Sounds fair to me. How far apart are we?
Slightly over 1 billion miles. Do you want that in kilometers? I note that your instruments are scaled in kilometers.
Immaterial. We understand both scales. Are you free or inert? And what is your orientation, lensman?
We are inert, but will approach free. Then I will inert again, and we will match your intrinsic and take you inside. The 3 maneuvers will take less than 1 hour.
Wait a half, lensman. That takes you off station, wastes 1 hour, and wastes power, as the Nighthawk must be huge compared with us. I can do it much faster and without wasting power, if you will supply astrogational data.
What data do you need, Captain?
Your intrinsic and your... No, I have a suggestion. You were using my eyes. Would you like to con my ship? Then you would gain some feeling for what Gay Deceiver can do. We're giving the techniques to the patrol in any case. You can, if you wish, be the first patrol officer to handle this type of ship. Does that appeal to you? I saw that we all felt the lensman's burst of pleasure and professional eagerness.
Yes, Captain. I've turned the con over to my astrogator. How do we do this?
Which do you want to do first, Lensman Smith? Match intrinsic or approach your ship?
Ordinarily, we approach, then match. But if you can reverse that order, the vector problem is simpler. Can you?
Certainly. Use my eyes to coach my hands. Don't try to control my hands.
I can't control your hands, Captain, and would not if I could. I have only recently learned to see through another entity's eyes via the lens, a special tutoring class under a gray lensman.
The gray lensman?
No, not a second stage. Dr. Jerry Doheny, a psychologist. Shall we begin?
Yes. Tell me when to point this bucket. I want to line my gun sight along your intrinsic vector, positive.
Very well, sir. Please change attitude so that I can see Rigel. There. Can you bring Sirius into view at the same time? Good. Imagine a point midway and go south of it about 9 degrees.
Beta Loopy.
Only third magnitude, but there's not much out that way.
That one, Lensman?
Right. Now take her left, slowly. Mark. Raise your bow just a hair. Mark. Steady on, keep it so. I think that's the best we can do by gunsight, Captain.
Is it good enough?
Yes. Nighthawk can make fine adjustments after approach. Our intrinsic along that line is, in kilometers per second relative to you, 97,362.6, but I'll settle for anything close to 100,000.
Positive per second 97,362.6. Set, Captain.
Change velocity. Execute. Thank you, Dr. Burroughs.
Let me get a report. Great balls of fire! My astrogator says you are dead in space with respect to us.
That was what you asked for, Lensman. Now coach me so that we line up with your ship, then tell us how far to move.
1 second. Will you get Deneb in your gunsight first? There we are. Now, easy. Toward the coal sack. Mark. Dead on, Captain. Our distance from you in kilometers is 1,609,014,320.
Transit positive, L-axis, short range, 16090143200.0. Set, Captain.
Do not execute, Dr. Burroughs. Lensman, is that distance correct?
I listened to the doctor read it back, Captain. It is correct.
And you said that we were dead on? Captain, I want to miss your ship, both in distance and direction. I moved my point of sight slightly toward Deneb. Doctor, please chop 10,000 kilometers off that setting.
Minus 10,000. Reset, Captain. Really, Captain Carter, there is no danger, as the Nighthawk will now go free. In the extremely unlikely event of a direct hit in over 1 billion miles, my ship will bounce ever so lightly that it won't even put a scratch on yours.
Lensman, do you know how my ship works?
No, but...
But me no buts, sir. Take my word for it that a direct hit, even with your ship free of inertia, would produce the most amazing explosion either of us has ever seen. But we would never see it. Both ships would be an expanding cloud of plasma, and all hands would be fitted either with halos or coal scoops. I agree that the chance of a hit is small, but I'm a cautious skipper. I take no chances I can avoid.
Neither do I, Captain. So the Nighthawk now goes free.
Reasonable. All hands, prepare to transit. Execute. Lensman, where are we now?
Clonos, Claws, you're dead in space to us. 6,800 miles. Make that 10,940 kilometers.
We see you near Canopus, so we are in Draco to you.
Can you give us a bright beacon, blinking by preference?
Certainly, Captain. Do you see it?
Got you. Please set for transit, Doctor. I'm going to miss that beacon by half a mil.
Set, Captain.
Execute. Off to port, 5 kilometers away, swam a giant spaceship. As it appeared, its dazzling beacon shut down, but milder lighting from the distant sun let us see it.
Captain, that's the most amazing display of piloting I've ever seen, and thank you for letting me take part in it.
I couldn't have done it without your coaching, Lensman. Do you now think that we have something the patrol can use?
I know you have. I can't wait to see your ship with my own eyes instead of yours. Captain, if you will permit me to place a tractor beam on you, we will take you inboard. It will be quite gentle. We are still free of inertia.
Lensman Smith, you know your ship just as I know mine. I don't want you to put anything on me, even a light line, until you can assure me that we have zero relative motion to about 19 decimals. I don't have instrumentation for that. As you noted, this vessel started life as an atmosphere craft. But I assume that you have.
We have. My astrogator is making fine adjustment to meet your safety requirements. There, relative motion 0 to 1/10 of an inch per hour. Is that satisfactory?
Yes. Do you have internal artificial gravity?
Yes, Captain, but it won't be switched on in the cargo hold until your ship is clamped in place.
Good. Just a moment. Hello, Gay.
Howdy, Zeb.
Gay Deceiver, fold your wings, put down your wheels.
Sure thing, Zeb. Heard any new ones lately?
You're a smart girl, Gay.
Why won't you marry me, Zeb? Philanderer. Over.
Over and out, Gay. Lensman, you can take us inboard now.
Captain, I assume that that was a recording. I hope it was.
I hope so, too. We're ready. Dee Dee squeaked when the huge ship flashed up to us. Then it backed off slightly, opened clamshell doors, gently took us inside. Armored crewmen clamped us to a large flat surface as the doors closed. Shortly we heard hissing that gradually faded. The voice in my head said,
"Normal Tellurian atmosphere at 900 millibars, Captain. Welcome aboard. I hope that you and your companions will do us the honor of dining with me and my officers at 18 hours, ship's time."
"Thank you, Lensman, we accept. What is ship's time now?"
14:02:10. That's Tellurian units, not galactic standard. The inner patrol stays matched with Prime Base.
I adjusted the outer ring on my watch, checked Gay Deceiver's time, wrote down the difference. Got it, Dee Dee?
Yes, sir. Feels good to have my headset right again.
Captain, I'm about to withdraw from your mind and come down to greet you in person. Side honors?
Please dispense with honors, Lensman. Before we leave our ship, I want to show you one more thing it can do. You are welcome to stay in my mind and watch. Do you have a piloting officer who would enjoy a short ride in our ship?
I'm certain they all would. So I'll send the most junior of the top watch list, Lieutenant Naganagana.
We'll expect him. Dee Dee, please open the bulkhead door and strap down as you did for Thuv and Hal and Mobius. Hilda, will you dog it open? You won't miss anything, Dee Dee. Promise. All hands, stay strapped or get strapped. By the time Dee Dee's seat was vacant, a young lieutenant arrived breathlessly. I opened the door and said, "Come in, Lieutenant. Slide past me and strap down. Introductions later. Hilda, help him, please." As I checked the door seal, Hilda reported,
"He's belted down, Captain."
Dee Dee echoed her. I instantly said, "Gay, bounce." Lieutenant Naganagana gasped. The voice in my head said,
"Captain Carter, what did you do?"
"Just a demonstration. Have you noted our position? Got us on your screens?"
Yes, you are 62,150 miles away.
"And 4/10",
corrected Dee Dee.
"Lensman, you're 4/10 of a mile wrong."
My apologies, Dr. Carter, you are right. That's around 100,000 kilometers. But we didn't even open the cargo hold.
Explanations later, Lensman. And please keep quiet. I'm piloting. Expect us in your immediate vicinity at once. Dr. Burroughs, I've set just a hair of Tennessee windage. You can make the return exact.
Axis L, vernier setting 4. Set, Captain.
Execute. We popped out within a kilometer of the Nighthawk. I swallowed my stomach and said nothing, and was glad that my slap-happy crew treated it as routine. I had intended to miss by at least 10 kilometers.
Lensman, please take us inboard again. I will not maneuver.
Very well, Captain.
Zeb introduced their guest while they were being taken into the ship. The young officer seemed to be suppressing shock and made a brave effort to be formally polite.
Didi said, "What's your first name, Lieutenant? Call me Didi if you like. We aren't very formal."
Ma'am, around the wardroom they usually call me Goo or Goop. That's short for Agu, means leopard.
While we were waiting for pressure, I said, "Lieutenant, please tell Captain Smith not to expect us at once. We need to bathe and change clothes before we see anyone."
"Aye, aye, sir."
"Captain," Smith lensed, "Mr. Nganagana can take you directly to guest quarters. Quite comfortable and roomier than your vessel, I'm certain."
"Thank you, Captain Smith, but I'm sure you know that ladies dislike to be seen until they've had time to dress properly. Dr. Hilda, how much time will be needed?"
"Dee Dee? Aunt Hilda, I can make it in 45 minutes if you can. Suits."
"Lensman, please make that 50 minutes, 17 hours ship's time. Now, if we may have privacy?"
"Certainly, Captain. I will not enter your mind or any of your party again, other than by direct invitation."
38. Dee Dee. Zebediah had us all gather in Hilda's, my, dressing room after Agu left us and the doors were locked again. Pop asked,
"What are the plans, Skipper?" "Jake, the lensman knows how cramped our cabin is, and Goop knows—"
I broke in with, "Zebediah, don't call him Goop. It's Agu."
"That the after compartment is so low that Dee Dee had to lie down to make room for him. But they don't know about our Land of Oz space warp, and won't, until if and when we show it off. So we'll surprise them. They will expect us to show up washed a bit, and possibly in fresh flight suits. So we give them the works. Hilda, can you put Dee Dee's hair up Barsoomian style?"
"Certainly, and she can do mine just as well."
"Okay, high heels and your prettiest formals, the ones you were married in, if that suits you, but it's your choice. High style with jewelry in your hair. Not all-out Barsoomian, but more rocks than you wore last night at Glenda's party."
"Good heavens, was that only last night?" "Sure was, Aunt Nanny Goat. Despite all the ducking in and out we've done, we've wound up with ship's time only 13 minutes later than Oz time. Is that chance or necessity? How does it fit your theory?"
"Discuss it later, darlings. Jake, do you have black tie along?"
"He does," said Aunt Hilda. "Both white mess jacket and black coat. I fetched everything Jacob had when I learned that there was extra mass allowance. Then I got them cleaned and pressed in helium."
"Cleaned and pressed? How?"
"Tira can solve any problem. Dee Dee had your clothes cleaned too. Poor little boys, you both need nursemaids."
"We married 'em. Good work, dears."
"Zeb," Pop said worriedly, "aren't you overdoing it?"
"Jake, I intend to. They have no idea what correct dress is where we come from, so we'll set our own styles and knock their eyes out. Wear the white mess jacket. It's short enough that you can put it over your Sam Brown without fouling your saber."
"Saber?"
"Saber. I'll lend you miniature ribbons for your lapel. I'm going to wear the medals themselves on my only suit of aerospace dress blues. And before you ask, I've always carried it on Gay Deceiver because the only times I needed to wear it involved trips away from campus. I'll wear navy sword and belt over it, and not mention that they don't belong together.
Zebediah, I asked, can you dance wearing sword?
Try me. Just try me.
I will if there's a chance. They have artificial gravity. I'm sure they must have music. If I get a chance to dance, I'll grab it.
As may be. 40 minutes, let's get cracking. I've got to shave.
43 minutes, Zebediah. We'll be on time. Boy, oh boy, did I have fun. I think everybody did, and I'm certain Aunt Hilda did. Did you ever go to a party where you could legitimately split 3 dozen men with only one other woman? All of them young and healthy and handsome, at least nice-looking. And all of them terribly anxious to please? Even the lensman wasn't much older than Zebediah, although he did have gray in his hair and some worry wrinkles. Understandable. I don't want to be a lensman. I just want to be Didi, and married to Zebediah, who would be a lensman, I think, had he been born where when they have lensmen. But that wouldn't suit me, as lensmen lead a tough life and are hardly ever at home and rarely marry as young as Zebediah is. As Lewis Carroll told me, all my dreams do come true. Pop needn't have worried. Zebediah wasn't overdoing it because the patrol's everyday uniform, all black and silver and gold, is fancy as can be. Add medals, they wore them that night, but don't when working, and it's downright gaudy. A lens makes even Barsoomian jewelry look plain. I don't know what I expected, but whatever it was, a lens is more. The nearest I can think of is an enormous fire opal with a light behind it. But take that and cube it. It's all colors, and the colors keep changing, and the lights come from the lens itself and dance like a color organ, but brighter and more alive. And I still haven't described it. I got a chance to ask a lensman about it at the cocktail party from 17 to 18. I put cocktail in quotes because my husband had warned us not to get spiffed. Fat chance. There wasn't a cup of alcohol in the Nighthawk outside of sick bay. The drinks were soft drinks, including tea and coffee, hot and cold. I took Coca-Cola because I had never expected to see a Coke again. Later at dinner, they drank toasts in a red wine called Phelan, but it's a stimulant, not a depressant, and tastes better, to me, than any of the alcoholic red wines. But about the lens. I asked Lensman Smith, or Captain as his officers called him, if it was true that touching a lens would kill anyone but the wearer. He said,
"Oh, no, no, no. That was a common misconception. The lens will kill anyone who tried to wear it except the person it was fitted to, but it is perfectly safe to touch it while it is being worn. Go ahead, doctor, touch it."
So I did, and snatched my finger back. Not a hurt, but a thrill so intense that I can compare it only to orgasm, but entirely different. And I suddenly knew that he was in my mind.
"Sorry, doctor," he said soberly. "I should have warned you. I didn't go deep, and I didn't learn anything that I didn't already know."
"Please don't call me doctor. Oh, I am one, but I'm not called by it, not even on campus. I'm not called professor often either. And anyhow, I'm not a full professor like my father. I'm just an assistant professor. Call me Didi. That's my usual name."
"If you will call me Ted, dear lady."
"But I can't, sir. In your own ship, you're captain. You can't be anything else. Why, I rarely call my husband anything but captain when we're in Gay Deceiver, and my father always calls Zebediah captain when we are underway. Even though Pop, my father, is older, and they are more than friends, blood brothers."
"What do you mean by blood brothers?"
"Meaning that they have fought and killed side by side, sir. What else could it mean?"
"Only that, to me. But some use that idiom loosely."
I suddenly realized that now was the time to ask him something. "Lensman, come into my mind." I turned my thoughts to a panic-stricken time by our lost forever swimming hole.
"Goodness," he said. "You really do mean it. The swords they are wearing?"
"Yes, sir."
"They handle them as well as Major von Vogt handles a space axe. Against firearms, that takes courage. A nasty customer.
Keep looking, lensman. I showed him that ranger with its clothes cut away, then opened up by Hilda, then the Pankera in the Palace of Memories. Then I blanked out and he withdrew. Captain, have you ever seen one of those vermin?
No, and I hope I never do.
He gave a shudder, just like ordinary people. I should not have brought it up at a party, but my husband and my father and Dr. Hilda will want to ask your advice later.
They shall have it if I'm asked. I'm not sure what it's worth.
He frowned.
I wonder. But later, later.
At dinner, Aunt Hilda was on the captain's right and Zebediah was on his left, and my husband got very little attention because the hillbilly was taking the lensman into camp. I've studied her in action, but it's not something I can duplicate, so I don't try. He may have started out thinking Hildy ate cat eagles for breakfast, but before he finished the soup, I'm sure he was convinced that she was sugar and spice and everything nice. Hilda is like a kitten, paws as gentle as snowflakes, until she shows her claws. I was on the chief engineer's right at the far end of the wardroom table, with Pop on his left. Chief engineers are always Scots in stories, but Chief Lee was from Mauritius and was Chinese and Tamil and looked Amerindian to me. He was pleasant, but I spent most of my time talking to Major von Vogt on my right, because Pop and the chief got involved in equations and almost didn't eat. I had to catch Pop's attention and signal, "No!" when he started to write on a napkin. The chief produced paper and the table linen was saved. Major von Vogt commanded the ship's boarding party, he admitted.
But we don't get much of that sort of fun. From day to day, we're the ship's guard, so I guess you could call me the chief of police. My top sergeant does the work. What I specialize in is sleeping. I'm very good at that.
He was so big that I had to look up to talk to him, even sitting down. 7 feet tall, I learned later. That was 213 and a third centimeters, 43 centimeters taller than I am, almost 20 centimeters taller than Zebediah, and massing about twice what my husband masses. He wasn't a freak. All the ship's guard came from Valeria, where they grow 'em that size. Then these medals are for sleeping?
Not all of them, Dee Dee. This one is for doing a good deed every day, and this one is for spelling, and this one is for whistling.
But anyone can whistle.
I do it underwater. Can you?
I don't know. I haven't tried. But porpoises can. I guess I can learn. I'll try it in the bathtub tonight.
Dee Dee, I'm sorry, but there isn't a bathtub in this ship. If we had known you were coming, the boys would have built one just for you.
Oh, there's one bathtub. I know. I took a bath in it 87 minutes ago.
Really?
Really, truly, Major. It's in this ship because our ship is in this ship. He had been pulling my leg. Now he was certain I was pulling his. I tried to estimate how wide and how thick he was. Can you wiggle through a bulkhead door? I paused to convert. 20 inches wide and 40 inches high?
A bit snug, but if I tackle it sideways and let out all my breath, I can make it.
That's the tight spot. The bathrooms are abaft the transverse bulkhead, but both bathroom ceilings are a bit higher than you are tall. It's a date, but I must check first. Father. Excuse me, Chief. Pop! Pop looked up.
Yes, Dee Dee? What is the fifth root of 932.2?
3.92556 plus.
Thanks, dear. Now, Chief, if we—
Pop!
What is it, Dee Dee?
Has Captain Zebediah okayed taking visitors into Gay Deceiver? Pop blinked like an owl.
The captain intends to take the lensman through our craft after dinner. The chief engineer and I will go then, whenever that is. You may check with the captain if you wish. But I assume that there is no objection. Protocol. Perhaps it would be polite to wait until after Captain Smith has seen it.
But Agu, Mr. Nganagana, has been aboard.
Ordered aboard as the lensman's surrogate, dear. Different.
Protocol. I've never had any use for it. Major, we'll sneak down fast as soon as dinner is over. Our ship isn't big enough for 6 people at once. He answered quietly.
I had better wait, Dr. Carter.
When did I stop being Didi?
When you extracted a 5th root in your head.
But that's just mental arithmetic. Anybody can do it with practice.
So, my space axe masses 60 kilos. Could you learn to swing it with practice?
What? Why, that's a kilo more than I mass. No. But I could learn to swing one proportionate to my mass. I'm quite muscular for my size.
That's just it, Doctor. You don't have the muscles I do. Your skeleton could not accept them. I don't have the mental muscles you have. I lack the capacity.
Major, if you don't stop calling me Doctor, I'll sick Dr. Hilda on you. She eats cat eagles for breakfast.
So I hear.
He glanced down the table at Aunt Hilda, looking tiny and doll-like and fragile.
Can she do your sort of mental arithmetic?
She does something much more difficult, or it is to me. She knows everything. Not everything here, of course. We've never been in a ship of the Galactic Patrol before. But she remembers everything that she has ever seen, read, or heard. By the way, you didn't fool me a bit. I know combat medals when I see them, even though ours are different. Do I sick Dr. Hilda on you?
Didi, I surrender. But you fooled me. You told me that you did programming on campus. I thought you meant assist students in arranging their study programs, administration.
Oh, no, I'm not in administration. My degree is in computer science, the mathematical end, not the hardware. Although a programmer must understand the hardware or she can't write an optimum program for the computer she is using. I'm designated astrogator for our vessel, but I don't do much astrogation. Mostly I devise special piloting programs for our autopilot.
Did you devise the program that put the whole ship in an uproar?
Did we cause an uproar?
You certainly did. That maneuver when you had young Ngana Gana as a passenger. If I hadn't been watching a screen in the control room, I wouldn't have believed it. I might not have believed my own eyes if I hadn't glanced at the old man right after you disappeared. Didi, it takes a lot to shock a lensman. Lensmen have the most stable minds in the galaxy. But I think you folks managed it. He looked as bewildered as I felt. How did you get out of that hold? Those doors are gas tight.
Major, I'm willing to answer that question, but I can't. It involves mathematics outside my field. My father invented the Continua machine. My husband engineered the adaptation of it to our ship. I simply program its maneuvers, or some of them.
Did you program the one that scared Goo almost blonde?
He didn't act scared. Yes, I did. I'm rather pleased with that program. Only 2 syllables, and we left the cargo hold and were 100,000 kilometers away. But it's perfectly safe, because I've programmed the autopilot not to accept any voices but those of us 4. If you said those 2 syllables in Gay Deceiver, she wouldn't hear you. She can't hear them with the doors open either. She has to be ready for space. Yes, it's a nice program. I like it. I enjoy writing a truly economical program. The major sighed, like a walrus sighing, but I didn't say so.
Didi, you've told me everything but how you got out.
Do you understand parallel universes?
I know of them. I don't understand them.
I'm not sure a 3-dimensional brain can understand them, but they can be manipulated. We didn't go out of that cargo hold. Pop's Continua machine pinned that locus, through other dimensions, to a second locus 100,000 kilometers away. My program simply told Gay Deceiver to do it. So we did. One gets used to it, though it's spooky at first. I reviewed in my mind whether or not I was under orders not to discuss certain matters. No, neither my husband nor my father had placed classified on anything, and I couldn't give away the secrets of the Continua drive even if I tried. Major, we are not from this universe. He answered slowly.
I've been dodging that conclusion for the past 2 hours. I'm glad you dragged it out on the deck.
In the past 29 hours, subjective time for us, we have been in 17 universes. Some were very much like our own. Some were very strange indeed. This one is the most like our native universe of any we've been in. So close an analog that we both speak English. Almost the same English. Different accent, somewhat different vocabulary, but near enough. Major von Vogt said thoughtfully,
English is not the ship's working language.
It isn't?
No. It's being spoken because you folks speak it, and almost everyone in the ship understands English, except some of my Dutchmen and some other crew members. But this table has been arranged so that those who speak English the most fluently are seated with you four.
That was thoughtful of the captain, but I can always manage to talk. If I don't know the language, I wave my hands and point. And presently, I do know the language. But I enjoy sitting by you, Major.
Me too, Dee Dee.
After toasts, dinner was over, but the party went on, with music one could dance to. I looked around for Zebediah, but he and the captain had disappeared. So I conscripted Agu and asked him to dance with me. Praise Clono, he had a firm lead, and that was all I asked. He started out easy, discovered that I could follow, and started to embroider. I didn't fall down. I stayed in step. Fun! Shortly, all chairs were back against bulkheads, and the table had already disappeared, somehow, and Hilda was dancing with an officer I had barely met. When the music stopped, an officer with the same stripes as the captain, but no lens, put his hand on Agu's shoulder and said,
R-H-I-P, son.
Then said to me,
May I have this dance, doctor?
Yes, if you'll call me Dee Dee. Thanks, Agu. That was fun. He thanked me with a big, toothy grin. I said to my new partner, You're the astrogator.
Yes, and you are astrogator of your ship. I need some coaching from you.
All right, we'll trade. But now, let's dance. He couldn't dance the way Agu could, but he knew all the classic steps and some I was pleased to learn, and he had a firm lead. I could tell a real man from a namby-pamby just by his lead. Some officers in Nighthawk could dance better than others, but all had firm leads. 30-odd men can keep two women awfully busy. They almost danced our shoes off. We loved it. The major asked Hilda to dance. It didn't work too well as she came up about to his medals, even in high heels. They did dance, in step, with the major holding down his strides and the hillbilly really stretching. Then the major picked her up, set her on his left shoulder, held her there with one huge hand, and waltzed solemnly with himself. Everybody applauded, and Aunt Hilda laughed and threw kisses at them and kicked up her heels, and a slipper came off. Somebody caught it, and they started drinking Phelan from it, almost not quite fighting for the privilege, and R-H-I-P got lost in the rush. Major von Vogt went right on waltzing. The tape of whatever they used sagged into another waltz, a familiar one. Aunt Hilda had a nice mezzo and a big voice for her size. She started singing, Way down in Missouri where I learned this melody. And everybody joined in, those who didn't know the words faking it. A soggy slipper isn't much good for dancing, but the Galactic Patrol can meet any emergency. Hilda told me later that it was bone dry, blown dry, I suppose, as with a hairdryer, and had talcum or some such dusted into it. The officer who claimed the privilege had no trouble slipping it onto her tiny foot. She went on dancing. Aunt Hilda was the belle of the ball, but there was plenty for me. I forgot all about time until I spotted my husband and suddenly realized that I had hardly thought about my husband for 3 hours and 7 minutes. He came up and claimed me. Yes, Zebediah can dance while wearing a sword. The music shifted to the Merry Widow, and we danced it as a pattern, which I didn't know he knew. I'm still learning things about my husband. He finished it with an exaggerated bow while making a knee, and I curtsied almost to the deck, knowing that Zebediah's strong hand would lift me out of it. We got wave after wave of applause. Hilda had been dancing with the captain. We swapped, and I almost got stage fright. I was dancing with a lensman. But Captain Ted Smith was as easy as an old shoe. He didn't try anything fancy, apologized for being rusty, said he was sorry to have missed most of the party, but hoped his officers had kept me entertained. I assured him that they had.
Your husband, Captain Carter, and your father, Dr. Burroughs, have been showing me so many stupendously fascinating things that I could hardly tear myself away. Then I had to send a rather long message.
He added,
part of what I saw were holopics, correction, stereo pictures, of what you showed me in your mind earlier, that vermin.
We weren't equipped to shoot holograms. We were taken by surprise.
Not so taken by surprise that two heroes and two heroines couldn't handle it. Your husband and your father let me see into their minds to supplement the still pictures. I'm much impressed by both you and Dr. Hilda.
I suddenly remembered parts of it and wondered if I could still blush. Apparently not. Then I recalled that lensmen learned to accept any cultural mores, no matter how prudish the ones of their childhoods.
Your father also showed me a stereo of the crater where your home had been and a mental picture of its destruction. All pictures, all data, are now at prime base and are being sent throughout civilization. We don't know that this universe is infested, but we are grateful for the warning. Forewarned is forearmed.
I didn't want to think about Panky. Did my husband show you our bathroom? The lensman managed to frown and laugh at the same time.
Yes, I don't understand it, and wish I could see Sir Austin Cardinge's face when he sees it. The only explanation your father offered was magic.
Captain, what other word is appropriate for engineering one cannot explain?
Clark's theorem. Yes, but I would like to see Sir Austin's face.
The party was over at the end of that dance. The invisible orchestra gave way to a military band playing Our Patrol. Nobody told us to stand at attention, but all four of us did. Then a young officer escorted us to our quarters. They were roomier than I expected them to be in a warship. A common room flanked by two staterooms, each with a small but complete bath. Showers, no tubs. I expected double bunks, probably stacked. But each stateroom held a double bed. I asked, Zebediah, what is this? Admiral's quarters? Or does the gray lensman use this suite?
I don't think so to both. Jake, look at this.
Pop and Zebediah studied something at one of the doorways.
Well,
said my husband.
They don't do things by halves, do they?
What are you two talking about? Aunt Hilda demanded.
My dear, this suite was constructed after we came aboard. It probably started right after we insisted on dressing in Gay Deceiver. But I think that the beds were built during the last 2 hours. Eh, Holmes? You know my methods, Watson.
My husband loves to show off.
Gals, we showed the captain and the chief engineer how quickly we could rig two double beds in Gay. The big one forward for you and me, the smaller one after for Sharpie and Jake. The captain glanced at the chief, lensed him maybe. And as soon as we had the forward one unrigged, the chief remembered that he had to phone the power room. He stepped outside Gay for about 5 minutes, then came back. But I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. I'm going to sleep in it.
Suppose he bites down while you're asleep, Zebby.
That's the horse's problem. Sharpie, if it worries you, you can doss in Gay Deceiver. You can't get lost. The passageway outside this suite, if you turn left, leads directly to the cargo hold where she is nested, with all side doors locked off, for our convenience and privacy, the chief said, although probably also to keep us from wandering into spaces where we should not be. But we aren't prisoners. Turn right and you are back in the wardroom and the pantry is manned all night. And that thing over there is a telephone. You can phone the pantry or anywhere else, even the captain's cabin.
Next morning, we were at prime base.
39. Zebediah. I woke up when we went inertialess. Dee Dee didn't. It's a queasy feeling, unlike freefall. It didn't nauseate me, quite, but it didn't seem to affect Dee Dee's cast-iron stomach at all. She still clung like a koala while we bounced feather light off the overhead. I managed to grab something, pulled us down, found the glowing light I had been told to look for, tapped it, and a net snapped over us. Went back to sleep. I woke once more when we acquired weight, rearranged my pet koala, went back to sleep. It had been a long day. When we woke and stayed awake, it was about 8, and we were hungry. Jake and Hilda were already awake, in the common room, and eating.
Lazy bones, she said. Nothing left. We ate it all.
Sharpie, how do I order what you are eating? And where did you find those dressing gowns?
Look in your wardrobe, dear. As for ordering, you don't. Because when I heard your shower, I ordered for you. Hot cakes, sausage, poached eggs, melon, and milk for Dee Dee. She's eating for two. Dry toast and coffee for you, Zebby. You're getting paunchy. It'll be here in a moment. That little cupboard is sort of a dumbwaiter.
It arrived before I could tell Sharpie what she could do with her dry toast. Same order for both of us, plus milk for Dee Dee. At 9, the captain phoned me. Captain, how soon would it suit you and your party to leave the ship? I was startled, but answered quickly. We can leave at once if you wish, sir. I may ask for astrogational advice. Am I to assume that Prime Base is expecting us? I didn't want us burned out of space. These boys had weapons that made sprint missiles seem like BB guns. Sorry, Captain. First, I should have said that we are now at Prime Base. I slept through it, I told him, trying to sound matter-of-fact. We can leave as quickly as we can man our ship, say 10 minutes, or twice that if Gay Deceiver's attitude is not horizontal with respect to ground level. I'll take her straight up to any designated altitude if you will alert your ground defenses to expect us at that locus, but I do need to know true horizontal since I will be flying blind and taking her out of your hold. Then I'll need a beacon to show me where to land. Again, Captain Carter, I have expressed myself poorly. If you are willing to do so, we will leave by gangway. And I hope you will accept side honors this time. The Port Admiral expressed his intention of meeting you at the foot of the gangway.
Captain, give it to me by lens. What do you prefer?
Zeb, my new friend, both Port Admiral Haynes and I will be disappointed if you do not accept full honors. But we do not insist.
Very well, sir. Full honors. In that case, we will need at least an hour. We must get clothes from Gay Deceiver and dress in her if she's right side up.
She is.
Good. I'll take her out of your ship later. Unless you intend to leave Prime Base as soon as we disembark.
No. We were relieved on station by patrol vessel Horned Owl, and my crew will be granted a few days groundside. Captain Carter, if you will trust me, your ship will be moved with utmost care, inertia-free, to a safe and convenient hangar. She already has the intrinsic of Prime Base, and to make doubly sure of not disturbing your instruments and apparatus, she will be placed in the exact attitude and orientation she is now in. By safe hangar, I mean one where she could not be hurt, short of Prime Base itself being reduced to molten rock and metal. This is the most heavily defended spot in this galaxy. Believe me, sir, after what you have shown me, the patrol is as anxious to protect your ship as you are.
You reassure me. By the way, what happens to open water surfaces in a state free of inertia? Our water closets are not like yours. Indeed, they weren't. Theirs weren't truly water closets at all. Better. Clever engineering I planned to investigate, but a few liters of water loose in our magic bathrooms would be merely a sloppy mess, not a catastrophe. The lensman took an inordinately long time, for him, to answer, possibly 5 seconds.
If there could be damage of that sort, it has already been done during the night. If so, I regret it and will make every possible effort to rectify it.
Take it easy, Captain. I'm certain that no real harm could be done. Just curiosity. I added, suppose we go to our ship now, then call you when we return here. An hour at a guess? Thank you, Captain Carter. It is now 9:04:07. Is it likely that we could all make rendezvous in the wardroom shortly before 11?
I see no difficulty. If one develops, I will call you.
Zebediah, I'm scared. I haven't the slightest idea what is meant by full honors. How do we act? How do we dress? Neither Hilda nor I have any smart daytime clothes.
Dee Dee, hon, quit worrying. The honors will be rendered to us, so we don't have to do a darn thing but stand in line and receive them. Once they're over, I'll salute and you three will barely bow, like this, hardly more than inclining your heads. No, Jake and I salute. We've established a precedent. Jake and I wear sidearms at all times. Sharpie, you said you fetched all of Jake's clothes. That wouldn't include an army uniform, would it?
It would. Dress blues.
I wish I had known that last night.
I don't. Pop looked just perfect.
I think so too, Zebby.
Jake's folly, I call it.
Zeb, when they sent me to the Pentagon, I consoled myself with a silly hope that I might someday be invited to the White House, or even sent there on an errand. After I had paid for it, dress uniforms were canceled for the duration, so I've worn it once, to an army day ball. But now I can't get into it. I'm too big in the waist.
Jacob, I have later data. It fits.
Huh? But Hilda, my dear...
Shush, my modest darling. Tira was prepared to alter it, but we checked your waistline from the notch you use on your Sam Brown. My slender hero, that uniform fits you. All Tira did was have it cleaned and that magic no-wrinkle stuff put on it that they use on silks.
I'll believe it fits me when I try it on. Did you fetch the dress belt? A Sam Brown is a World War I anachronism. Doesn't matter whether she did or not, Jake.
I did.
Because we are setting our own styles and can't be wrong. While this universe seems to be based on Dr. E.E. Smith's colossal space operas, maybe vice versa.
It's the same either way, Zebby. You're still hung up on causation. Forget it.
It's at least 2 or 3 centuries in our future, if we were on the same time axis, which we aren't. So we can't be wrong. Wear the belt you prefer. But you and I always wear sidearms.
Zebby, any reason Dee Dee and I can't wear our pretty daggers?
Not if you want to. Why?
Just thinking, dear. Just thinking.
We spent more time working out how to dress than we did dressing. I had kept my academic regalia in my car for the same reason I had uniforms there. More likely to need the stuff at some other campus than on my own. And still at hand if I joined the academic procession where I was nominally a professor. Dee Dee and Jake had no reason to keep gowns and hoods and such at Snug Harbor, but 3 months earlier they had packed their car to go to Snug Harbor before they attended commencement at Logan, then had headed for Snug Harbor, just chucking their robes into the back seat. The stuff had never been returned to Logan. So we put Dr. Hilda into Dee Dee's academic gown through the gals shortening the hemline in a hurry. Dee Dee is broad-shouldered and in high heels almost as tall as Jake, so with high heels, his gown fitted her well enough. Jake's hood was large for Hilda, but those things don't really have to fit, and it had a magnificent gold and scarlet lining. They tacked it up a bit and made sure that the lining showed well. It set off the sky-blue lining of Dee Dee's hood. But Jake's mortarboard could not fit Hilda short of thumbtacks. No matter, that degree factory I went to uses a soft hat for doctorates resembling a four-cornered tam o'shanter, right out of the Middle Ages, which that school is not. Its gold tassel tied in with her hood. Needle and thread and some hairpins and Hilda looked good in it.
Hillbilly, what are we going to wear under these? Those fancy lightweight flying suits Tira had made for us. And our daggers. But Aunt Hilda, those things are leotards, tights, and translucent?
Not all that translucent,
and the swirly colors worked into them confuse the issue. We showed lots more skin last night. Cap'n Zebby said we could set our own styles. I'm going to wear the flesh-colored stick-on cheaters I wore last night, so that if I'm invited to take off this nightgown, I'll still be smartly dressed. Tell her, Zebby.
I was about to back up Dee Dee, but I suddenly switched sides.
Dee Dee didn't want to wear a gingham dress or slacks or jeans. Such being the sort of clothes she had had at Snug Harbor, she just wanted to be assured that what amounted to a paint job put on with an airbrush was all right. Dee Dee girl, are you running a fever? A couple of days ago, I saw you standing in the starboard door of Gay Deceiver dressed in a happy smile, in full view of at least 500 men and a dozen women.
But that was Barsoom.
And this is Prime Base in another universe, and they know we come from still another universe. Sharpie is right. We set our own styles and can't be wrong. We were dressed and back in our suite in the Nighthawk before 10:30. We hadn't been slowed by water slopping around. Either being inertia-free doesn't bother a surface of water, or our bathrooms are in another universe. I favor the latter theory. I had time to renew my shave while the gals were busy with hasty sewing. I called Captain Smith, told him that Gay Deceiver was not in his tender care, then Jake and I practiced sword salutes by the numbers, counting cadence silently, holding each position for two counts. Just draw, swords, and the rest of it silent drill. We got it down pat. We tried it with our wives between us. Yes, with Dee Dee on my left, I could handle the return to Scabbard without poking out one of her eyes. She needs both of them. At 11:05, we showed up in the wardroom. Captain Smith bowed to our ladies, said good morning, shook hands.
Thanks for being so prompt, Captain.
There was nothing to slow us up. Water in our bathrooms had not spilled.
Really? I'm relieved to hear it, and would like to look into the phenomenon. Later. The Port Admiral is ready. If you are.
We're ready. What's the drill, Captain?
Quite simple. You four will leave the ship first. I will follow you. The Port Admiral and his party will be facing the gangway about 30 feet from its foot. There is a gold line on the floor about midway between the gangway and the Port Admiral's party. If you and your companions will stop at that line and wait, honors will be rendered. Immediately following honors, the Port Admiral requests that you accompany him to his lounge for lunch, if that suits your convenience. If not,
it does. Please tell him so.
I have so told him.
Lenses have their minor uses, too. No messenger.
I was about to say that you could be taken to your guest quarters, and let me add that the hangar for Gay Deceiver is reached by a short private passageway from your quarters.
Most convenient and thoughtful. Shall we get on with it, sir?
This way, please.
When we reached the quarterdeck, a big compartment with a door leading out, I could see that Lensman Ted Smith had gone all out, as I had suspected when I saw how he was dressed. A black and silver and gold uniform dressier than that he had worn the night before, and polished delimiters at his hips. I had expected him to dress up. He had said full honors, but I had not expected some touches hoary with tradition. The officer of the watch at the gangway was the astrogator, reasonable, but he carried, tucked under his left arm, an ancient spyglass. Reasonable. I wondered if it functioned, then decided that the patrol would not use a fake. After seeing that, I was not surprised at 8 side boys, and still not surprised, but much flattered that they were junior officers rather than enlisted spacemen. The ship's guard took up most of the deck space. 50-odd Valerian Dutchmen, all about the size of their commander, use a lot of cubage. As we appeared, Major von Vogt gave,
"Present! Humph!"
And 50 space axes flashed high and came abruptly down. I twice asked permission to leave the ship, first of the captain since he was present, then of the astrogator since he had the deck, with a hand salute to each, then headed out between the double rank of side boys. Trust Dee Dee to toss a curve into anything. One of our side boys was Lieutenant Nganagana. Dee Dee, right behind me, said,
"Hi, Agu."
Nganagana kept silent, stayed rigidly at attention, eyes front, frozen ebony. Dee Dee stopped dead, said to the lensman,
"Captain, my friend won't speak to me."
This would not have mattered had I not at that instant stepped over the non-existent waterway and saluted their colors. I assumed they had colors, I never saw them, in the direction I thought of as aft, thereby formally leaving the ship, and the shrill whistle of the bosun's pipe sounded. Hell's bells, I don't think the Galactic Patrol had bosuns. But they did have boats, small spaceships carried aboard, and there must be some officer responsible for their upkeep, so he may be known as Boats, and regardless of rank. As maybe, somebody had a bosun's pipe, knew how to play it, and had to get us all across that gangway on one lungful of air. Meanwhile, Dee Dee held up the procession. I heard Smith say sharply, "Ngana Gana, answer the lady."
"Hi, Dee Dee. Take care of yourself, Agu. I'll see you."
Dee Dee consented to resume the march. I waited until she was beside me, then hurried a little. The gangway was a horizontal footbridge about 4 meters wide and 40 long. I wanted to get us to the far end before that lilting skirl stopped, both for the player's lungs and for his face. We made it, but it was a dead heat. I hope he didn't rupture a blood vessel. We stopped at that gold line. Me, Dee Dee, Hilda, Jake at far left, spaced out to let Jake and me handle swords. Captain Smith stopped short of the line, on my right. Facing us was more gold lace than I had ever seen, even at the embassy in Melbourne. We were somewhere underground, but in a gargantuan hall or cavern so wide, high, and long, and so brilliantly lighted that it felt like outdoors. To our left was a huge military band in uniforms more colorful, gaudy, than the display of gold lace and medals facing us. Facing the band on our right was rank after rank of patrolmen. The far end of this guard I could not see, but it was at least a regiment. As we stopped, loudspeakers everywhere boomed. "Present arms." Captain Smith saluted. The Port Admiral and his party saluted. I did not. Jake did not, but my hand quivered in restrained reflex. A line of trumpeters, front rank of the band, lifted their gleaming, bannered, bell-flared instruments and started flourishes, while drummers behind them matched them with ruffles. Ta, titty ta ta ta, boom, titty boom boom boom. I expected them to stop with four, enough for any skipper, but they continued with a fifth, and a sixth. And I knew we were in for it. "Zeb, you four-flusher, can you swing this?" I wished I were back in my teens again, mowing lawns and throwing papers. I even felt homesick for Jockstrap U, where the cockroaches ate out. But I recognized the music that followed ruffles and flourishes. This brought me into focus. I knew the role I was expected to play. It was the Viceroy March, also called the Ambassador. The patrol calls it something else. No matter, it's as high as you can go. Sovereignty saluting sovereignty. Equals acknowledging equals. When it reached its crashing coda, I expected honors to end, since they couldn't play our national anthem, not knowing where we were from. I waited for the command to order arms, ready to signal Jake. Nope. From the rear of that mighty hall, over half a kilometer away, came a line of flashes. Then, about 2 seconds later, kaboom! The sound reached us both directly and echoing endlessly off ceiling, walls, and floor, so that it was still rumbling out when the next line of flashes appeared. Traditional black powder? I didn't know, but it looked and sounded like it. If so, they must have enormous scavengers to suck the smoke away. On the other hand, it may have been done by exact simulation. No powder, no cannon. I never did ask. I counted 4 second intervals between flashes, while wondering where they would stop. 21, 50, more? The Port Admiral and party stayed frozen at salute. The Guard of Honor at present arms. When I saw the 21st flash, then counted 6 seconds past it, I knew they were through. So, as the rumbling roar died out, I signaled Jake. Draw. Swords. We went through it like clockwork, a 12-second silent drill. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Didi give a slight but distinct bow as we came to present arms, then straightened and stood tall as we returned swords. Hilda was right with her. Our pipsqueak salute was nothing compared with their full honors, but we did it correctly and in step. I felt relieved. The loudspeakers boomed.
Order! Humph!
The Port Admiral's party broke and moved toward us, as we moved toward them. As introductions were made, I heard the troops ordered to parade rest. All the reception party wore lenses. Two of them were in plain gray leather uniforms, but neither was the gray lensman, Kinnison. Port Admiral Haynes was entitled to wear gray, but chooses to accept the burden of commander-in-chief and wore black, with rank insignia. However, his chest was not covered with medals. He wore just one, around his neck. Shortly, a car glided out from behind the band. I should say vehicle, as it was a very low platform with a long bench on it. No wheels, no noise, no apparent source of propulsion or guidance, no driver. It stopped by us. The Port Admiral handed up Hilda and seated her. His flag lieutenant, Captain Fernandez, seated Didi, and Jake and I wound up between Dr. Lacey and Commander Ted Smith, still dressed as captain, even though groundside. The dozen odd others melted away. I didn't see where. Once we eight were seated, this vehicle started down the long line of troops at about 3.